Welcome to Get Connected with Nina Del Rio, a weekly conversation about fitness, health, and happenings in our community on 106.7 Light FM.
Good morning, and thanks for listening to Get Connected. As we've ended a year filled with so much grief, and we enter a new year with so much hope, this conversation will touch on what truly matters in life, especially in this uncertain time. In The Beauty of What Remains, How Fear Becomes Our Greatest Gift, Rabbi Steve Leder shares personal and heartwarming stories about death and life as a guide to reflect on our own love and loss. Steve Leder, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you. It's an honor to be with you.
His website is steveleder, LEDER.com. Steve Leder is the senior rabbi of Wilshire Boulevard Temple in Los Angeles. To begin, this book was born out of two experiences, a sermon on death, which turned out to be the most popular you ever gave in 25 years, and then a year to the day later, the death of your father. Can you start out telling the story of this book?
Yes. Well, the idea for the book came from a sermon that I gave several years ago about the 10 things I had learned about life from seeing death up close over all those years. You know, I'm the rabbi of a very large congregation, and literally, without any exaggeration, I have, you know, attended to more than 1,000 dying people and their families and guided 1,000 families through this process of loss and goodbye. And of course, thousands of others through the process of dealing with and making the most of many other types of losses. There are many kinds of death, the death of a dream, the death of a job, the death of relationships. So, you know, I had spent a lot of time helping people through loss and thought I was doing a pretty good job of it. And then my own father died. And I realized that much of what I had been saying and doing to help people through loss was, as I say in the prologue of the book, just one degree shy of the deepest truth. And I wrote this book to set the record straight and hopefully to serve as a guide for all of us, like a field guide for all of us who have the challenge of living with loss and using that loss to ennoble our lives and make our lives more beautiful and more meaningful going forward. And that's why I called it The Beauty of What Remains.
There is so much to talk about the wisdom that you give in this book, but I want to talk about your father for just a moment and ask you, before we talk about his death, about his life. What was he like?
My dad was a blue-collar guy. He owned a junkyard with my Uncle Mort, and it was literally a junkyard. I worked there every weekend as a kid, scrubbing toilets and floors and helping out in the yard. He did not go to college. He barely finished high school. But he was about as street smart a guy as you could ever meet, and had a brilliant EQ, very high EQ, could read people well. But he was crass and he was crude and he was extremely hard on me. I was his oldest boy. I have three older sisters and a younger brother. My parents were 17 and 18 when they got married. They didn't know much about parenting. They had horrible parents themselves. And my dad was mostly very, very tough on me. And I grew up with a lot of anxiety and fear in my home. And yet, he was also one of the funniest, most life-loving people any of us will ever know. So he was a mixed bag, and it was dealing with the cognitive dissonance of all of that that was also part of the fuel and the energy behind this book, is the tension between the dad I loved and the dad I was afraid of.
You do talk about that in the book, about, I remember the chapter you're talking about eulogies. We distill the essence of a person down to just a few paragraphs, and it may seem at that moment like it's not time to discuss their flaws, the bad stuff. You're discussing sort of the flaws in your father now. Where do those flaws come in? Why are they important as well?
Well, I think they're important because they help us make peace with that tension, that cognitive dissonance I was talking about earlier. You know, there's a truth about memory. We always say, may his memory be a blessing, right? And he'll live on in memory. But that extra 1% of truth behind all of that is that we should really be honest about the duality of memory. And the duality of memory is that it's beautiful and it really hurts. Sometimes it's both. It's bitter and it's sweet. And I think being honest about that fact, being honest about the fact that we all have flaws, we all have weaknesses, we've all made mistakes, and being honest about it and facing that, not only in life, but also in death, is, in my opinion, the only way to make peace with it. I don't think denying it is the way to go.
In the beginning of the book, you talk about something that maybe you can only learn with experience, as you have presiding over so many funerals over the years. Dying people are not afraid of dying. And if you're afraid, right, it's not your day.
Yes. This is really good news for everyone. I have literally attended to more than 1,000 dying people, and not one person. And by dying, I mean actively dying. I mean within hours or a day of death. Not one person, and I ask, are you afraid? Not one person has said yes. They are not afraid for themselves. Sometimes they have fears for their loved ones they're leaving behind, that they're not going to be okay. But they're not afraid for themselves, not one person. And why do I say that's good news? Well, obviously it's good news for the dying, because it really is a peaceful process. But it's also good news for the living, because it means if you're nervous and anxious about dying, it's not your day. You know, anxiety is for the living. So relax, because it's not your day. Now, I'm not telling you that people don't sometimes die suddenly. You know, people do get in car accidents and things like that. But generally speaking, death comes at the point that we're well prepared for it. And it comes as kind of a welcome friend, not as a stealthy kind of enemy.
Steve Leader is the senior rabbi of Wilshire Boulevard Temple in Los Angeles and the author of several books, including the bestseller More Beautiful Than Before. His new book is The Beauty of What Remains, How Fear Becomes Our Greatest Gift. You're listening to Get Connected on 106.7 Light FM. I'm Nina Del Rio. And I want to stay with fear for a moment. In the clergy, you need to have a bit of fearlessness that comes with being with those people who are dying. You have to ask about what they want at their service, what they want said at their service, for instance. What does fearlessness mean for the rest of us? How to behave in those circumstances when we are fearful?
Yeah. Well, it means, first of all, and most important of all, showing up. Walk through the door. You know, Nina, even after all these years of experience, when I'm standing at the front door, ready to walk into a home to meet with a family where a loved one is dying or has died, I don't know what I'm going to say. All I know is, if I walk through the door, if I just show up and I am authentic and I am myself, something beautiful will unfold. You know, people call me all the time and say, Steve, I'm going to visit my best friend from college who was just diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And he's going to die in 3 to 6 months. I'm going back east to see him. What do I say? And my answer is always the same. Just show up. Just walk in the door and be yourself. And the right things will happen. And by be yourself, I really mean it. Don't put on some false persona for the person. Don't do a bad acting job for people you love who are dying. Be yourself. If you're a hugger, hug. If you're a joker, joke. If you're a feeder, feed. If you're a listener, listen. Just be who you are with them in death, who you were with them in life. That's what people want, and that's what people need. They want you to show up authentically. And the rest, I promise you, will work out.
You have a lovely way of putting it in the book. Do not waste the rest of your loved one's life worrying about his or her death. I think that's a lovely thought if you were outside of the immediate circle. If you're in the immediate circle, though, you're the caretaker. That's a very difficult line to thread, perhaps.
It is. It's hard to remain present. But people who are dying are nevertheless, they're fully alive, and they deserve to be treated with all the dignity and love and attention that a fully alive person is entitled to, because they are fully alive. And you don't want to miss the end of your loved one's life working on logistics for a funeral. People sometimes call me and say, you know, my mom's been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. She's going to die in 3 to 6 months. I want to meet with you and plan the funeral. And I don't do it. I won't do it. I said, that's wrong. To be honest with you, Nina, I can plan a funeral in 15 minutes if I need to. And I tell them, there's plenty of time for that later. Your job now is to be there for every good moment and to be there for every bad moment. Your job is to enjoy the rest of your mother's life, stop worrying and catastrophizing her death. First of all, when you catastrophize death, it never turns out the way you think it's going to turn out. So you've wasted all that time and emotional and psychic and spiritual energy on something very frightening and very negative, and it's not how it's going to turn out. So be present. Keep yourself on a very short time leash. Instead of catastrophizing the future, I tell people, ask yourself a better question, which is, what can I do in the next hour that is helpful or meaningful for my loved one or for me? That's a much better question than all these nightmare scenarios about what's going to happen when the person actually dies. So as cliche and facile as it sounds, force yourself to stay on a very short time leash and be present and be mindful in the presence of the dying.
After the person has gone, when you are grieving, whether it's in the short term or the long term, you are very vulnerable and everything can feel like an intrusion. How do you protect yourself?
You protect yourself by being very honest about your needs and sharing them. You know, no is a perfectly good answer. You know, I once did a session on the Today Show about called When the Holidays Hurt, because the holidays are terrible times for a lot of people who are grieving. Terrible. And you have to sort of take some responsibility for protecting your heart and your soul. You know, say no to the parties and the booze and the shopping and say yes to a walk with a good friend. You know, a warm blanket and tea and a good book. You know, behind, this is sort of a way to think about it. When you're vulnerable and you protect yourself with saying no, the truth is behind every no is a yes. When you're saying no to something, you're simultaneously saying yes to something else. And in this case, self-care and time to reflect and time to grieve and time to heal. So the first thing I would say to you is, you know, get good at saying no and really, really narrow and limit the number of people and the number of things that you're willing to engage with. And it will help you. You have to heal.
People of all backgrounds search for signs that the person who is gone is not only still with us, but is communicating with us. You know how this goes. The light was left on. You hear the song on the radio, all these things. Even if we may know we're reading into things, there's something that's so comforting about that. You just never want to let it go, no matter what your background is. Can you talk about, I don't know, I don't even know the question, the importance of that or what that, why we do that?
First of all, it's very real. And I have heard too many stories and experienced too many myself to dismiss it. I say lean into it and enjoy every minute of it. Not long ago, I was walking around a golf course in Palm Springs that I used to walk around with my dad. And when we were little kids, I'm one of five, my dad and mom would put us all in the blue Chevy station wagon on a Sunday, and we'd go for a drive, and he would sing You Are My Sunshine to us because he was so happy being with his family. It was his favorite song, and when he sang it, somehow, despite how harsh and frightening he could be sometimes, I just knew he really loved us. And so I was thinking about my dad very deeply. I was holed up in a house in Palm Springs alone working on the book. And I went out at night for a walk when it cooled down, and I was walking this golf course, and there on someone's porch were the words to You Are My Sunshine. And I just fell apart. Now, was that a projection on my part? Was that just a coincidence? Or was my dad somehow saying, I understand, I'm here still? I lean into the latter, and I don't care if it's a fantasy. It comforts me, and it's beautiful. And my dad is with me every day. He still makes me laugh. He still scares me. He still corrects me. He still annoys me. He's with me. Because any of us who've seen a dead body, and I've seen many, we know that that is just not the person. There is so much more to us than our bodies, so much more. The body is a temporary vessel, in my opinion. And our soul, in religious terms, but you can call it whatever you want, our spirit, our energy, our essence, whatever word you want to use is fine with me. I use the word soul. I really believe that there's an afterlife to the soul and that it can be felt by those of us still in the physical world. I know I feel my dad's presence all the time, and I love it, and I love when I dream about him. I say lean into it all. It's beautiful.
Rabbi Steve Leder's book is The Beauty of What Remains, How Fear Becomes Our Greatest Gift. His website is steveleder.com, steveleder.com. Thanks for joining me on Get Connected.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
This has been Get Connected with Nina Del Rio on 106.7 Light FM. The views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of the station. If you missed any part of our show or want to share it, visit our website for downloads and podcasts at 106.7lightfm.com. Thanks for listening.